Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It was not only nice to get the first round out of the way, but it's also I'm only three shots out of the lead. To be able to put myself there after not playing for, was it 10 months or so, it was nice to feel the adrenaline out there, and I had to dial it back a little bit, some of my clubs. Obviously, I was a little jacked up. The shot that I hit over there at 14 was pretty sweet, a little 95-yard pitching wedge. If I would have had that same shot early in the round, I couldn't have played it because I haven't figured out how to dial it back yet.
Just generally speaking, I haven't seen the athleticism in a golf swing like this in a few years. And I don't know if it's just, you know, the pain reduction, getting rid of that, and then all of the training he's done around that, but it really was moving a lot more fluidly than I've seen in quite some time.
Well, what happened is John Curry was on the road yesterday out in Los Angeles meeting with Washington State coach Mike Leach. No deal was brokered. I think officials at Tennessee said, listen, you need to get back. Don't negotiate any deals with Leach or anybody else. We need to meet. We're going to reassess, sort of readjust where we are in this coaching search. I think the feeling among the administration at Tennessee was that the way this thing had gone, and that maybe he'd been out there on his own too much, that they needed to go in another direction. So the decision was made after meeting with UT Chancellor Beverly Davenport this morning that they were going to part ways.
Still ready to play. Excited as ever. You know, ready to go. I really can't wait. I think I could do, you know, everything that's within my power to do. You know, I think anything that I've done before and anything that I haven't done, hopefully I could achieve it, really. I mean, I think the sky's the limit. I feel like I'm in great shape. I think I could just be a help out there to try to make a play and help us put us in a position to win. So I don't really feel any pressure that's, like, put on me directly in any type of way. I haven't got that from anybody. More than anything, I'm just excited. I'm having, like, the most fun that I've ever had doing this.
Well, we know it's 10 because everyone talks about it and everyone's on social media and things of that nature. We understand how we got here, and that's defense, and that's the way we've been playing offensively. If you win 10-plus games in any sport, major sport, that's very, very good. We don't want to be complacent. You know, Saturday, it's another struggling team. We understand that, but we understand we're going to get their best.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a good Friday afternoon. Welcome into this edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Quislin in for Bob France. A little family has to do a sports thing, so it's a good news thing. And that's why I'm sitting in the big chair for the next 2 hours on this Friday. Chris Mitchell's hanging out with me, and here's how we're going to do it. Open phone lines on a free-for-all Friday, if you will, here in hour number one at 866-240-1065. Then in hour number two, you heard LeBron at the end of that montage. We're going to get to a lot of those things you just heard in there. Chris Manning of FearTheSword.com. Cavs site on SB Nation. He's going to join us at 4:10. Cavs have won 10 in a row. Shumpert is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. And there's a story out today that said a bunch of Cavs named names as well. Didn't really want Dwayne Wade at first. And I can kind of understand that, but given how he's settled into that bench role, that was actually the right move, twistedly enough. So we're going to get into all those things top of next hour with Chris Manning of FearTheSword.com. It is Friday, and that means a visit also at about 4:40 with Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. A little post-mortem about Central Catholic's state semifinal loss a week ago. Updates on a game that's going on right now over at Talk Radio 100.7, the only remaining division, the only remaining team from Northwest Ohio still alive in state title action this weekend. One game yesterday, a couple games today, a couple games tomorrow. That's a Division V undefeated Eastwood, their first ever state title game. They're taking on another undefeated in Wheelersburg. That game over on Talk Radio 100.7. We're going to get Bill's thoughts on that game. I told him, hey, we got that game on the other station. Make sure you're chiming in on that one because I'm going to definitely ask you about it. First trip for Eastwood and the only Northwest Ohio team playing for a state title this weekend. And then the majority of that conversation with Bill Clark at 4:40 will be a hoops preview of all the conferences, as after all, a programming update for you. First high school basketball broadcast of the season. Rogers at St. John's tonight, 7 o'clock the coverage time. And then after that game, we're happy to announce that every Friday during the high school basketball this season, this is a new thing. We've done it for high school football because it's, well, obvious, everybody plays on Friday. But after every Friday Bill Clark game, we're going to then send it over for about an hour or so. In this case, it'll be like something like 9:30 to about 10:30 tonight for a high school basketball scoreboard show. So happy to introduce that coming up this year. So we're going to talk all those things with Bill Clark. So guests in hour number two, but open phone lines here in hour number one of Free For All Friday at 866-240-1065. And a bunch of things to get to. You heard some of that in the montage. First, Tiger Woods. You heard from Tiger Woods. We were bringing him up yesterday. Bob and I here on the extravaganza. He's actually playing golf again. Despite what I'm about to tell you, I'm still in a mode of I'm not buying it. Maybe I'll start changing my tune depending how he does over the weekend. Did pretty good yesterday. And right now, he is in a 4-way tie for third. One shot off the lead. 8 under. He's 5 under through 17 in the tournament going on in the Bahamas. So for a second day in a row, we pose this question out to you. Are you buying Tiger Woods being back? I just explained I'm still not there yet. One round and almost the completion of a second round. Good. He certainly does look better on the golf course than he has in quite some time. I'm not going to sit here and be ignorant enough to deny that. But am I buying that quote-unquote Tiger Woods is back? No, I'm not quite buying that one yet. I'm sorry. To those who seem it might be a cop-out, I don't think it is. And I think a lot of you out there have the similar type of feel, which is, well, let me see him go through at least a whole tournament before I start making those kind of declarations. Because when the conversation has come up at points in the last decade of quote-unquote, is Tiger Woods back? What we're really meaning is he back to being that Tiger Woods that can win majors? Yeah, I need at least a full weekend tournament to at least make some kind of estimate on that. However, I will give him his due after a first round Thursday. And again, I mentioned he's 5 under through 17 holes today. He's certainly on that path right now. But come Monday, I'll have a lot harder of an opinion on that front. So you heard from Tiger Woods there. You also heard from Chris Lowe, ESPN's SEC reporter, talking about the craziness going on at Tennessee. We covered it earlier in the week, as you all recall, with the protests by the Tennessee students and alums and politicians down there, although I did see something absolutely hysterical on Twitter earlier. I don't know if this is a Photoshop or not. If it's not, mwah, Tennessee people, believe it. That's about the only props I'm going to give you, because one of the rocks said, painted, welcome to the Tennessee Browns, because the way this story has been evolving through this week, they're quickly shaping up to be the Browns of college football. So first you have all the protests for Greg Schiano, who, as we all know, is the current one of the current coordinators under Urban Meyer right here at Ohio State. No issues there, but he said, and suddenly, oh, somehow Schiano is truly involved in the whole Jerry Sandusky thing. So we at Tennessee, we don't want that, even though we have no leverage whatsoever because we have been a terrible football program for at least 10 years now. And the next shoe to drop was the AD was unceremoniously thrown out the door as a result of this entire fiasco. So that, to me, on top of the story you may or may not have read about Mississippi today, more sanctions, more scholarships taken, and after a self-imposed ban this year, a ban from the NCAA for bowl games next year. Now, in the grand scheme of things, what Mississippi has done is not really all that different from a story we've all read 100 times over. But that, combined with the zoo going on at Tennessee, has been bubbling in my mind all day long, to the point of, in the broadest sense, and we're really, I want to take some phone calls definitely on this at the bottom of the hour. How do you go about fixing these. Like, for real. And this is where part of the conversation some people will bring up, well, you know, it's time to just pay the players. Or do you change recruiting rules? Do you give extra things? Do you be more severe in terms of punishments for the rules you laid down? How do you fix one of the most corrupt things in all of sports, professional or amateur, the concept of college recruiting? It's akin to the old sausage being made. You don't really want to know how it's done. But we all know that it leads itself, because we've read stories about this time and again, seemingly forever. Heck, going back to my youth, before I could really remember or comprehend things, that was the old SMU thing. And things were going on before that. So in the broadest sense, it's all made me think again, how do you go about doing it? Is it time to pay players? I'm still not really on board with that concept. At best, I might be softening my opinion to say, okay, well, at best, maybe it's either you take the full ride scholarship or you take some X amount of cash, but you can't have both. I'm still not even ready to go that far. But it's clear the current system will just be abused again. In 6 months, we're going to read a story about a different school doing almost the same thing you read about Mississippi today and yesterday. Where does it end? How do you fix it? Or do you just let this go on being, especially with the biggest of big boys and in football, do you just continue to let this be the whole corruption thing that's been going on? It's not just coaches and recruiting. It's the whole boosters thing. You know, how do you actually go about fixing it? And I don't think there's any good, full, right answer. I don't necessarily think there's really a wrong answer anymore either. It is really maybe time to put everything, yes, maybe even paying the players in lieu of scholarships, an idea I'm not really in favor of, but I don't know how you go about fixing these things. So you heard a little bit of that. And this is where I want to close at least this first segment. And remember, open phone lines on all these things and things you might not be wanting to bring up. 866-240-1065. It is Friday, so free-for-all Friday. And that's especially true here in hour number one as we have guests coming up, some basketball and some high school sports in hour number two. But the other name you heard, and I'm obviously not saying any of these things in order, you heard from Josh Gordon, who will be starting for the worst team in all of professional sports this Sunday, the Cleveland Browns. We've all been talking and reading about the things he says he used to do, like being involved in gangs as a kid. My favorite still is the I was high or drunk or both for every single game I've ever played. Because honestly, if that part is absolutely true, and right now I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because these were what he said to these various interviews and magazine stories that have come out in the last couple weeks, that's really going to be the most interesting thing to watch, because that means if that's true, every time you saw Josh Gordon on a football field, he was high as a kite. So what's he going to actually play like when he's dead sober, as he claims he will be this Sunday? I don't know, and you don't either. But it gets back to the whole thing. Should he be given this chance at all? Ideally, probably not. It's one thing to give a guy a second chance, or maybe even some guys a third, but as we've all joked, this is what, his 1,000th chance, it seems? Or, okay, you know, enough exaggeration. In actuality, it's like his 6th chance. And that's really actually stripping it away and not exaggerating it. He's on his 6th or 7th chance, not his 2nd. But I've made the argument that's on the other side, which is, no, let him play. Because the Browns stink so much, he's right off the bat the best player on the roster now. He's playing for his career. He's a restricted free agent after this season. And once he actually steps on the field Sunday for the Browns, then all that'll kick in. He'll be a restricted free agent this offseason. Nobody's going to give him a payday of any kind. This is really a tryout to see if he can actually keep his head above water and still show anything on the football field. Whatever contract he gets, which I actually, if he plays okay, I kind of hope the Browns match it. And I'll get to why on those fronts in a second. But he's playing for his career. This is it. I really believe this is it. He screws up this one. No one will touch him or even bring up his name ever again. The flip side of, well, if you're the Browns, why are you going to do this? Because you're the Cleveland Browns, and you're in no position to demand anything. If you were a better-run organization, i.e. not the worst-run organization in all of professional sports, then maybe you can have a little righteousness and say, well, we're not going to play a guy like that. But you're the Browns. You're in no position to demand anything. And quite frankly, your entire front office and entire coaching staff need you to somehow pull a win, pull a W out of your A at some point before the season ends. Otherwise, y'all's getting fired. And y'all know it, too. So you're in no position to basically shun away who is now the most talented player on your roster, which is an indictment of a whole bunch of other Browns things that we don't have time to get into because we only got about an hour and 45 minutes left in this show.
Even if he was still Stone, he'd probably be the most talented player.
Oh, yeah. That's why it's a mutual thing right now. Almost any other organization in the NFL,
yeah,
I could see and agree with saying, no, we're not touching this guy. You had your chances. You blew it. But you're the Browns. And you need to do something, anything, to stop sucking. And it's a tall order, we know, because you've screwed up so much. So why don't you just... So that's why I'm fine with him suiting up and actually going back on the football field, because if he can actually keep his nose clean these last five weeks, then you're in a kind of win-win situation, because he could go out and show people that, hey, here's what I could actually do when I'm sober, and look at that, I could still be a football player. Make me some offers in my restricted free agency year. And the restricted part, of course, means the Browns, if they choose, can match. Which, if he shows any talent still lingering, and he claims he's in the best shape of his life and dead sober, then you should bring this guy back because you're so bereft of talent. And in the here and now, you had one win last year. You know, I'm not even going to go into the numbers. Any Browns fan has already heard it, and saying it again will probably just make your head hurt. And I don't want to give anybody headaches on a Friday afternoon. But you need to do something to make sure the win column isn't zero. We're just about to the point, just like we were at the end of last season, where anything to avoid a zero in the win column is all that needs to happen. I mean, the Niners and Giants have played just well enough that you're not losing the number one overall pick in next year's draft to either of them, or the Colts, which is the second worst team in the AFC. So while this situation is there, it's like when Tom and Jerry in old cartoons, there's this other animal in the cartoon that's picking on both of them, and so they do that cartoon thing where the enemies shake hands for a minute and go out and, you know, do whatever to the third one. That's what we got going on here. They just have to shake the hands, so to speak, and try to do something that is beneficial to both of them. For Gordon, it's getting out in the field, showing he can be sober and still be able to play the game. And for the Browns, you need to do anything to avoid that offer. And if he shows any kind of talent, then whoever's in the front office can have the debate of, he's a restricted free agent, do we match anybody else's offer? Knowing that I can't imagine any team this offseason, assuming he stays sober and somewhat productive these final five games, I can't imagine any team giving him more than $5 million a year with more than 2 years. In other words, if you're the Browns, you can match that and probably should in that scenario because you're so bereft of talent. So what do you think? 866-240-1065. Is this something they should do? Should they have just kicked him to the curb weeks ago and not even dealt with this? If you were in charge of the Browns, what would you do on this situation? So lots of fun things to go into here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushland, Chris Mitchell, we're hanging out with you until 5 o'clock. Mike Miller will be back on Drive Time. We're in for Bob today. Open phones is first hour at 866-240-1065. Guests next hour, we're talking Cavs with Chris Manning of SB Nation, FearTheSword.com, 410. Bill Clark for the last talk on high school football as we now shift gears to high school basketball. And again, on that note, programming update, your first high school basketball broadcast of the year. Yes, December starts today, and so does high school basketball for all intents and purposes. Rogers at St. John's is the game we'll have for you tonight, 7 o'clock coverage time with Bill Clark and the crew here on the ticket. That'll be followed by the inaugural episode of the High School Basketball Scoreboard Show, which we will bring to you every Friday night here on the ticket immediately following whatever high school basketball game we have, because, of course, as you guys know, Bill and them broadcast the Central Catholic games during football season, but basketball, it's a free-for-all, and we're going to try to get as many teams on these airwaves over the next couple months during the high school basketball season as we possibly can. But right now, quick timeout, check a weather, check a traffic, local sports center update, where we'll also update you on the score of that Eastwood Division 5 state title game that's going on over on Talk Radio 100.7 right now. That game kicked off only 30 minutes ago, so I'm going to pop in there, get a score update for that one. We'll get you a sports center update, and then I want to open the floor, not just to these other things I brought up so far, but on the college football story, stories, really. And in a broad sense, how do you go about fixing this? Because, you know, we're just going to read in another 6 months about a program doing something almost identical to what Mississippi is getting busted for. There doesn't seem to be an end in sight. We've read about these things seemingly since we were little tots, and these have happened hundreds of times, it feels like, and it'll just continue to happen again and again. So how do you go about fixing it? I don't know what the right answer is, and I'm not sure there's a great answer to that question either. We're going to dive into it and try to make some sense of it next here on a Friday, a free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
401065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are here on a free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushland, Chris Mitchell hanging out with you on this Friday. Bob's out attending to some sports-related things with his kids, and we hope them the best. He'll be back in the big chair coming up on Monday. And also, no, Mike Miller, he's back in the big chair tonight for Drive Time. Coming up at 5 o'clock, he's got to have some fun guests, all championship game related, by the way. I got his little guest list early. He'll be talking with Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch and the Buckeyes. Talking with a current UT Radio Network personality, but more known as the former UT quarterback who had all his records broken. Bruce Gradkowski will join Mike a little later today. And Gary D'Amato will also join Mike. He's from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Wisconsin perspective. So a lot of championship game stuff when Mike Miller returns for Drive Time tonight at 5. 866-240-1065. Numbers are there, and we are open right now for phone calls and anything and everything on this free-for-all Friday. Got thoughts on Josh Gordon, what's going on with him, should he even be playing, and all that stuff. Happy to take those calls and anything and everything you may have. Mentioned the score real quick in the update. I found the game on the TV machine here in the studio as well, so we're also hanging out and keeping our eye on this Eastwood Wheelersburg Division 5 state title game, the only Northwest Ohio team still alive, and no score right now. We're about midway through the second quarter at this point. And I'm looking at a little chart right now. Wheelersburg is sixth in the entire state for most playoff appearances at 29. So whereas for Eastwood, it's their first state title game, Wheelersburg, I saw another graphic a little bit ago. Wheelersburg has been to the at least state semifinals seven times, including this year, and won a state title way back in 1989. So playoff-wise, they are the more veteran club, if you will, in this. Eastwood, more or less, the neophyte in this one. But Eastwood is holding their own, especially defensively. Right now, if my calculations are correct, at this point, Wheelersburg has negative 6 yards. Total offense, negative six. as a no score with 6:33 to go before halftime. We will keep you updated on that game as we go along here this afternoon, and we're happy to be able to pick that game up through the OHSAA, Ohio High School Athletic Association radio guys. They do some things for these type broadcasts when you get this far into the tournament, and happy to be bringing you coverage of this game. That's over on Talk Radio 100.7, but we will keep you updated as we go along. But I wanted to devote this segment topic-wise. And again, anything and everything, always fair game at 866-240-1065. On a broad question for college football, we're all trying to get excited, and we are, for conference championship weekend, which actually begins, I keep calling it weekend because the Pac-12 title game is later tonight, Stanford-USC, I believe 8 o'clock or so for the kickoff. And then the rest of the games tomorrow, which also, of course, include Ohio State in the Big Ten and Toledo in the Mid-American Conference, even though that won't factor in for the playoff part, the latter. They're still playing for a conference title for the first time in over a decade. Tomorrow will the Toledo Rockets. And I'd love to just be talking about that. I'd love to just have this segment, Chris. Chris Mitchell joining me. He's helped me out today. I'd so love to just be talking about that today. But I had to broach the broad question because if you've read the craziness that's been happening, you know, in college football over the week, off the field stuff. You know, first you had the Tennessee thing back on Sunday with the massive protest against Greg Schiano, which made Tennessee, or at least the Tennessee people thought it made them, remove him from consideration after, I believe it's called the Memorandum of Understanding or whatever it was called. So they pulled out of that. Well, the other shoe dropped on that one. They let go of their AD. Their former legendary coach, Philip Fulmer, is the interim AD. They just announced that maybe 20 minutes ago. So there's that. Coaches are going all over the place. Jimbo Fisher's going to Florida State for Texas A&M. You have fun with that because your best days are going to be behind you. Texas A&M is now a middling program in the SEC. Yeah, you had a bad year this year, but you could have still been a top dog in the ACC. Maybe he just needed a change. I don't know. I'd also love to be bringing up the thing about JT Barrett and his surgery he had on Sunday. And despite having surgery, he's going to be fine and is expected to play tomorrow night. Urban Meyer said as much yesterday in the presser. But then you get to the last story. The national guys were starting to bring this up yesterday because the hammer was going to come down. And it did. On the University of Mississippi. They're the program in the spotlight right now for recruiting violations. Booster corruption. You know, stuff you've heard 100 times over the course of your life. It's literally just every time it comes up, it's basically the same story. You're just changing whatever school name in question. And we all know darn well, in about 6 months from now, there's going to be another program that has basically all the same issues. And they'll get sanctioned and get banned from a bowl game. And so it got me thinking. And I don't have a good answer to this. But I'm throwing it out there because that's what Free For All Fridays are about. 866-240-1065. In the broad sense, how do you fix these things? Corruption in college recruiting. It's the sports world equivalent of how sausage is made. We all, it's the old cliche with that and joke with that. You don't want to know how sausage is made. In college sports, you don't want to know how recruiting really works. Because it's underhanded, it's corrupted, and it's all kinds of messed up, and there's so many little fine print rules that have been put on the NCAA books over the decades that certain things that really seem innocuous, and really when you look at them, are innocuous. Become major things that players get kicked out for, coaches get the boot for, programs get sanctions and bowl bans or NCAA tournament, if it's basketball, like, you know, Louisville. And that, you know, there was your basketball one of the last 5 months. And that was a huge one. Especially relative compared to this Mississippi one in football, that was still even more gigantic. But it's constantly happening. Every 6 months, some other program, whether it be basketball or football, is getting in trouble for, in the broadest sense, what are corrupted recruiting violations. How do you fix this? And I don't know what the right answer is. I've long been a proponent, or a proponent's not the right word. I've long been against the concept of paying the players. At most, the farthest I've been willing to go on that is, okay, player gets recruited, you got a choice. Full ride scholarship, as they currently are, or we pay you X. You can't get both. I feel just by me even saying that makes me feel I'm softening on my position. But I don't know what to do about this. I don't know what the right answer is. Because these things are clearly just going to keep happening. And clearly the deterrents are not deterrents at all. And for anybody who, because they show it every couple of weeks, I've noticed. For anybody who's seen, and I think by now most of you have seen the 30 for 30 Pony Excess on the old SMU thing. And that I'm bringing that up in the context that ever since then, the NCAA doesn't want to ever go that route with another program again. More or less, people right after that decision was made, and that was 1986, right? 86, 87, somewhere in that neighborhood. And ever since then, the thought is, wow, we must never use this death penalty thing again. Well, clearly, everything but the death penalty are not actually deterrents, because you're not stopping squat. These all keep happening. Over and over again, and in little messed up ways that are getting reinvented all the time. Like, remember a couple years ago, one of the big stories, I don't even know if they do this anymore because the attention that got put on it, but some programs might still be doing it for all I know. Remember in the SEC, Chris, a couple years ago, the story would be, say you had 50 scholarships. Well, they'd actually give out 60, and then right before the deadline, they'd cut, quote-unquote, 10 guys, or whatever it was. And that was the du jour for a little while. Quick update for you. Big 20-yard touchdown run. Eastwood is now on top, 6-0, awaiting the extra point. About 2.5 to go before halftime. So Eastwood leading the Division V state title game. We'll have more updates for you again as we go along. Actually, check that. It was more like a 12-yard run. It was a big sweep to the left side of the line into the corner of the end zone. So Eastwood on top in the Division V state title game. But the point, again, is how do you go about fixing this? And I don't know what the right answer is. And I feel it's so messed up that even I, who had been staunchly opposed to this all this time, is starting to open up to the idea that maybe if you pay some of these guys, maybe a whole chunk of this will start going away. I'm constantly reminded every time, too, Chris. Okay, I want your thoughts on this, too, and your thoughts at 866-240-1065. And I see we do have a caller, too. We'll get to you in just a second. Looking, every time one of these stories come up, I think back for some reason to the end of the Jim Tressel era and how all that went down with the selling of the gold pants. You guys all remember the story. And I keep looking back on that and thinking, given how college football is, I can't believe anybody was punished for those things. Oh, sure, it's totally fine to look down on the various players who maybe sold, you know, their gold pants. For example, and saying, well, that then you're showing no respect. But that doesn't mean it should be illegal. And it is, per NCAA rules. That's why the hammer came down on Tressel in the program at the time. Which is what caused the, remember, Urban Meyer has an undefeated season at Ohio State, but they were under bowl ban that year. But they still went 12-0, if you recall. But that was the year they were banned because of these incidents. Meaning, once again, there's part of the deterrent problem. You're never actually punishing the people who are doing it. So I don't know what the answer exactly is. I don't think there's any correct answer necessarily. And I'm not even sure anymore if there's a good answer. It's just, it's so complicated and so just shady and corrupt and has been for decades and we all know it.
There isn't a good answer. There really, I mean, it's been going on for so long now, for decades. And like you, I love the fact that you bring up the SMU point. Because they hammered.
Yes.
And they never recovered SMU.
No, that in many ways they still haven't. And no. They'll never be that kind of power again.
They'll never get picked up by a Big 12. They'll never get picked up by an SEC. Because, first of all, the program isn't big enough anymore.
Yep. That was one of the fallouts among many from that.
Right.
And as such, and yeah, just go back and watch the 30 for 30 again. When you get to that part at the end, they're literally saying, yeah, we got to make sure we never do this to anybody else again.
What about death penalties for coaches? I know we have show causes, but what about, hey, if you get caught multiple times, if you have multiple infractions as a head coach, how about a death penalty for a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, this is why there are no necessarily good or full right answers on this. And I'm going to go over somebody, a couple of proposals on this in a second, but I am told we got some callers. Chris, who do we got right now?
We got somebody who wants to talk about Jimbo Fisher. I didn't quite get his name.
All right. Hi, you're on the Extravaganza on the ticket. Who's this?
It's Cam from Toledo.
What's going on, Cam? What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I wanted to comment quickly on Jimbo Fisher, say that he went from being a large fish in a quite small pond to a very small fish in a very large pond.
Yeah.
I mean, in an ocean almost, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it.
But, I mean, now that you got talking on these penalties, I'd rather actually talk about that.
Go ahead. That's why I'm opening the floor, because I don't know what... I even feel like I'm softening my own position, which I've been very staunch about all these years, which is, no, we're not going to the level of paying them. But I got to admit that even that has to be on the table, because I don't know what the right answer is. And clearly, whatever deterrents are out there just ain't working. That's been demonstrated time and again.
Honestly, I mean, it's one of those things where every solution, in very small quotations, every solution has almost an opposite problem that it brings. You know, I feel like paying some of these players would cause almost to an extent, an uneven playing field for some of these smaller schools to land the home run recruits. You know, I think it would get to the point where almost like Alabama, you know, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Michigan, the schools that have the very lucrative athletic programs would be able to afford more.
And there's no doubt about that. Unless they were to do this and somehow write a rule that says whether you're Florida International or Alabama, you get the same amount for your football players. And I doubt they would ever do that in that scenario. So by definition, if you went this route, it would be vastly unequal to the Toledo and Bowling Greens of the world. There's no doubt.
Exactly. And the problem that I have is then it becomes, how is it now, you know, amateur sports? Because now these kids are getting paid, you know, on a salary cap, you know, and
and this is one thing I feel I've learned, and I'm not meaning to cut you off. I'll let you finish your answer in a second.
Oh, that's okay.
That part is one of the reasons why I kind of always smirk in that snarky kind of way when the amateur thing is, because it seems like the way it's gone on over the years, the only people we're holding to the amateurism standard are the players. Everybody else could be as professional and level and business and make your money level as possible, but no, we got to make sure the kids are still the amateurs. Why isn't everybody held to that standard? Because clearly only the players are.
Right. And I feel like those teams that are able to be, I have a hard time coming up with any kind of solutions for it.
Because
honestly,
that's my problem. That's why I'm opening the floor in this thing, because I don't know what the I honest to goodness, Cam, have no idea what the solution is, except to say that clearly what's going on right now and what quote unquote deterrents are there just aren't working. And what we all read about yesterday and today about Mississippi, I promise you, we'll be reading the exact same story, except with Mississippi in 6 months, except with Mississippi changed out for a different school, and it'll be the same story.
Right.
And Cam,
right?
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but let me throw another wrench in that real quick. If you pay the football players, you got to go down a road that you got to pay all the athletes, the women's, the
girls
men's
volleyball, chess, men's cross country, whatever sport
precisely,
is sponsored
precisely.
By whatever school.
And that's another issue is it creates a situation where honestly you're not going to be able to. You're not going to be able to succeed with it, because if you do, I mean, you're going to, like you said, you're going to have to pay all the athletes, every single one of them.
Yes, because somebody will legitimately sue under one of the Title IX or whatever that are supposed to be filed, especially by quote-unquote state schools, not as much the private ones, but especially, you know, your Ohio States or your Alabama's state schools have to follow those kind of guidelines. And if you pay players in one sport, you basically have to play them at all. And I know that's another
exactly.
thing that's out there.
Exactly, and then it's going to create a whole other problem that people that play, say, basketball feel, you know, more than well, our program, we should be paid as much as the football players.
You know, a program like Kansas or Duke would argue that, because even though football's still your big generator, their names are made on the basketball court.
Exactly. You know, you have a, you know, even like, you know, I know over in Indiana, Indiana's huge basketball state, and that's the same thing. You know,
the Hoosiers have always been a basketball, quote unquote, first school, at least in my perception of it. Their football program has been middling at best.
I spent a little bit over a little bit of time over in Indiana, and believe me, they make sure they tell me every time. We're a basketball state. You know, anybody will tell you that over there. It's huge, and they're talking about. They're talking about recruiting over there in basketball like we're talking about football recruiting over here, you know?
It's just, the money and the corruption is a little bit less because football's the biggest moneymaker, but by being the second biggest moneymaker, college basketball, that has almost as much, you know, just think of the Louisville story from, what, 2 months ago? That was just two and a half months ago.
Right. And that's another thing. I think, honestly, the punishment to me should lie with the coaches. Ultimately, should lie with the coaches.
Exactly. Yeah, because that's where it is hard to punish a player who, say, has now already gone to the NFL and you know, he's making his millions or something by then. I mean, maybe there's a fine you could throw in there, but it's not really going to deter the player as much because they're already gone. But something has to be with the coaches, because the one thing I can't stand, and this is how the punishments have always worked, of course, as we know, is just take the Mississippi example. Now they're banned again from a bowl game next year. Well, if you're a freshman at Mississippi next year, you had literally nothing to do with this. Nothing. And you're going to suffer for it.
Exactly.
That's never been right.
That's not even a punishment, because most of the players are off to the NFL. You know, the people that actually had are gone and off in the NFL making millions of dollars, and the kids that are coming in now that have literally nothing to do with it are the ones ultimately paying the price. And
they're trapped. Let's say they wanted to leave. Let's say they had a second offer from Mississippi State and they wanted to leave. They can't leave. They're sunk in that contract.
Exactly. And that's the worst of it. You know, that's the worst of it.
No, I hear you. I'm up against it. Thanks for checking in. I mean, thanks so much, Cam. It's a tough topic. That's why I said there's really no good right or just good answer to this. And on some level, hopefully one day there will be an answer for some of this, but it's going to be an answer that is not going to please everyone. There's just no way to go about it. But I don't know if the NCAA is even ready to approach these kind of things. They don't seem like they are. Talks about the paying of the players, for example, always gets tried to be immediately shut down. And again, I say all this as someone who is not in favor, though I find myself softening the position because on the grounds of maybe everything, including that, needs to be put on the table. It's a messed up situation. It will stay messed up. We'll keep reading about these stories until clearly something relatively radical has done. We are up against it, though. Time for a quick timeout. Unfortunately, as we go to this timeout, a late touchdown to close the first half, and they made the extra point. Eastwood did not on their touchdown. 7-6. Wheelersburg leading over Eastwood right now. Halftime of the Division V state title game. Coverage of that game from the Ohio High School Athletic Association radio crew is over on Talk Radio 100.7 right now. We will keep you updated on that score and that game as we go forward, but we are up against it. Quick timeout. Check of traffic, Sports Center update, and then we got guests here in hour number two. Chris Manning will be up first, talking Cavs from SB Nation, and then a little Bill Clark for this Eastwood game, Postmortem Central, and some basketball, high school basketball previews. All that straight ahead in hour number two of this Friday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It was not only nice to get the first round out of the way, but it's also I'm only three shots out of the league. To be able to put myself there after not playing for, was it 10 months or so, it was nice to feel the adrenaline out there, and I had to dial it back a little bit, some of my clubs. Obviously, I was a little jacked up. The shot that I hit over there at 14 was pretty sweet, a little 95-yard pitching wedge. If I would have had that same shot early in the round, I couldn't have played it because I haven't figured out how to dial it back yet.
Just generally speaking, I haven't seen the athleticism in a golf swing like this in a few years. And I don't know if it's just, you know, the pain reduction, getting rid of that, and then all of the training he's done around that. But it really was moving a lot more fluidly than I've seen in quite some time.
Well, what happened is John Curry was on the road yesterday out in Los Angeles meeting with Washington State coach Mike Leach. No deal was brokered. I think officials at Tennessee said, listen, you need to get back. Don't negotiate any deals with Leach or anybody else. We need to meet. We're going to reassess, sort of readjust where we are in this coaching search. I think the feeling among the administration at Tennessee was that the way this thing had gone, and that maybe he'd been out there on his own too much, that they needed to go in another direction. So the decision was made after meeting with UT Chancellor Beverly Davenport this morning that they were going to part ways.
Still ready to play. Excited as ever. You know, ready to go. I really can't wait. I think I could do, you know, everything that's within my power to do. You know, I think anything that I've done before and anything that I haven't done, hopefully I can achieve it, really. I mean, I think the sky's the limit. I feel like I'm in great shape. I think I could just be a help out there to try to make a play and help us put us in a position to win. So I don't really feel any pressure that's, like, put on me directly in any type of way. I haven't got that from anybody. More than anything, I'm just excited. I'm having, like, the most fun that I've ever had doing this.
What we know is 10. Because everyone talks about it, and everyone's on social media and things of that nature. We understand how we got here, and that's defense, and that's the way we've been playing offensively. If you win 10-plus games in any sport, major sport, that's very, very good. We don't want to be complacent. You know, Saturday, it's another struggling team. We understand that, but we understand we're going to get their best.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And back we are here, hour number two of this Friday edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France here on this Friday. Chris Mitchell hanging out with me also here in the studio today. We're going to talk with Bill Clark, all high school sports things coming up at about 4:40, a little postmortem on Central Catholic's loss last week to Trotwood in the state semis. Thoughts on Eastwood, who's playing their state title game in Division 5 right now. They're at the half and trailing Wheelersburg 7-6. Wheelersburg got a late touchdown in that second quarter right after Eastwood went up 6-0. They missed the extra point on their touchdown. And up until that last drive, the defense for Eastwood was really holding Wheelersburg down. There was a point where Wheelersburg, midway through the second quarter, had a grand total of -6 total yards. -6. And they eventually put a drive together right before the end of the half there and ended up going up because they made their extra point. 7-6 is where that game is at halftime. We will keep updating you on that one as we go along to here on this edition of the Extravaganza. And Bill Clark, he's going to break down some of what he saw and heard from this game. A little bit on Central Catholic, as I mentioned, from their loss last week. And then some basketball previews. Tonight, first basketball broadcast of the season. We start a new month, December 1st day, and we start a new high school sports season, if you will, with high school basketball. And incidentally, it's Rogers at St. John's is the game of the night, if you will. And Bill Clark and the crew will have the call around 7 o'clock. And then as soon as that game is over, we haven't done this year. We've done this, obviously, for football, which makes sense because, you know, Friday Night Lights and all that, right? But starting tonight and every Friday night game we have over the course of the high school basketball season this year, we'll also be bringing you the high school basketball scoreboard show, giving you updates on all the various games going on a Friday night. And incidentally, let me run through here because either teams are opening the season, literally first game of the season tonight, or they've played one game tops at some point during this past week. Elsewhere on the docket, you got Start hosting Finley. Clay is at Tiffin Columbian. Anthony Wayne's at Lima Senior. Maumee at on the road at Wellington. Napoleon's at Patrick Henry. Ottawa Hills hosting Delta. Maumee Valley Country Day at Wellington. Genoa's at Oak Harbor. So there are some of the games on the high school basketball docket tonight. And, of course, Roger St. John's, the game we'll have for you 7 o'clock here on the ticket. So a lot of that. We are efforting right now Chris Manning of Fear the SoarSword.com Cavs site on SB Nation. There's random news on that front, and that's why I was trying to get Chris on the show today. Hopefully we are able to get a hold of him. Hope his phone and such didn't die. It wouldn't be the first time in situations like that. But the Cavs have won 10 in a row. They struggled again all night with the Atlanta Hawks yesterday. Struggled mightily with them, but eventually came away with win number 10 in a row. Longest winning streak in the NBA right now. They vaulted themselves all the way up to third place right now in the Eastern Conference, percentage points behind the Pistons. And they're going to get Tristan Thompson back, maybe in a week, it sounds like, from his injury. All the reports are that Isaiah Thomas may be coming back in mid-December. Yes, that's right, while it's still 2017. Most of us, yours truly included, assuming that it was 2018 sometime he would come back. And it looks like we may not be getting Chris. Something's up with his phone, obviously, as we're having a hard time getting a hold. We'll keep trying, though. But that'll keep the phone lines open, by the way, for anything and everything, especially the college football. How do you fix the corrupt recruiting? We just read another story today and yesterday on Mississippi. They won't be the last. It's seemingly the same story every 6 months. Some school's getting something thrown at them because they broke some recruiting violation. And how do you fix it? Is there even a good or right answer to it? I don't know. So much so that, again, I, as someone who's been against paying the players, agrees that that has to actually be put on the table now because something has to be done. We're all tired of reading some program every 6 months getting in trouble for something. So we can keep the phone lines open for that at 866-240-1065. Your thoughts on Josh Gordon going to play his first NFL game in 2 years on Sunday. Should he be playing at all? Tiger Woods, who, by the way, is finished today, 7-under after two rounds over in the Bahamas. I forget what even the name of the tournament is, but it doesn't matter, right? 7-under. He was 4-under today. 5 shots off the lead because Charlie Hoffman went 9-under for the day. He's at 12-under for the tournament. But Tiger Woods in a 4-way tie for 5th place right now after 2 rounds. Are you ready to say Tiger is back? I'm still not buying that just yet. I'm just not. I need to see at least a whole tournament first. But he sure looks like it. So far today and yesterday, that's the best golf I've seen him play in, it feels like 5 to 8 years because it's been that long. Well, it feels like it's been that long. It may very well be. I lost track sometimes. Sometimes I feel like I lost track on the whole thing. But anyway, back to the Cavs part real quick. So there's the injury thing, yet they've won 10 in a row. Derrick Rose is still trying to figure out whatever the heck he's going to do with his life. As far as I'm concerned, don't come back. This team's way better off without you at this point. So I wanted to get into some of those things with Chris Manning, but it looks like we're having a hard time getting a hold of him. So instead, we will go back to the phone lines, 866-240-1065. They'll remain at minimum at this rate, it looks like, as we're unable to get a hold of Chris Manning. Looks like they'll remain open until Bill Clark in about 20 minutes. So let's go to Brandon in Toledo. He wants to jump in on one or two of these conversations. Good afternoon, Brandon. How you doing?
All right. How about you?
Hey, not too bad. What's on your mind today?
The coaching with the thing with the coaching and the legal recruiting. My thing is, you know, we've seen what's going on right now in college basketball with the Rick Pitino, and we haven't heard some of the names drop yet with some of the other coaches that I guess are expected to be on this report. But aren't you under the impression that it's possible this could start to deter it from happening in college football? We're kind of to see what happens with Rick Pitino and how that affects everything else.
I'd like to believe that that would be true, but until something comes down, I'm not going to put the benefit of the doubt in that. I mean, it feels like there's been some bigger scandal coming up, a different one every couple of years. Oh, this will be the one that finally makes everybody get it. That has yet to happen. So I'm in a mode of I'd have to believe that. I'd have to see that to believe that. And otherwise my answer would be no, I don't think it would.
And one thing that's always bothered me is I never liked the show cause penalty because the schools, like you said, the kids who have nothing to do with this always get punished. We've seen it with USC, We've seen it. We see it with all these programs where the coaches dip, the coaches dip, and the school is left holding the bag. Why don't we? Is it possible that they can start fining these coaches, you know, substantial amounts of money, so that way there's actually a reason to, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing this because it's going to cost me boatloads of money.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the biggest problems right now with trying to punish anything in any of the college sports, is that all the deterrents seem to end up in practice actually affecting those who came later and had nothing to do with it. The various specific players involved, especially ones that end up in the NFL or the NBA, they're fine. That's all in their past. The coaches a lot of times seem to get away more or less scot-free. It's the future part of the program that ends up paying the penalty for it. And if the answer is to keep kind of the structure as it is now with what's supposedly illegal and such, then the whole concept of how the deterrents work would still have to be completely rethought. There has to be some way to be able to punish those who actually are responsible. And that just doesn't happen the way it's structured right now.
Yeah, and see, here's my thought. See, I'm a Michigan fan, mm-hmm. so I'm familiar with Jim Harbaugh and what his contract is. And one of the things that I was thinking, and I don't know if this could be legally done, so I know Jim Harbaugh is scheduled to make $7 million.
Right.
Couldn't there be things put in contracts that are mandatory in contracts where if something happens, you're found to have recruiting violations and the school is punished, mm-hmm. a percentage of that goes back, you have to pay that back to the school? Because I know if I'm a coach making $7 million and I mess up and I have to pay half of that back, that's going to stop me from wanting to, do stuff like that.
I mean, that's a good option, and that's a decent answer, and that's the thing about this, Brandon. Right now, there are no really completely good or right answers. So that's why I keep arguing that everything's on the table, or should be, and something like you laid out, that something like that absolutely should be on the table. It absolutely should.
Because you see it all the time, whereas these coaches, they tuck and roll. They got the money. They were paid. They were there. And like I said, the school is left holding the bag. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and Brandon,
Pete Carroll was kind of it. Yeah, Pete Carroll did that at USC, and look, he goes
like
to the NFL, he's making his
prime
money.
Example of this in the last 10, 15 years or so as well, just because of how high profile he is.
Brandon,
and USC
quick,
is still just now coming back.
Yeah, just now.
I was going to tell you about Rick Pitino. Did you read where he's suing Louisville for $37 million that he's owed?
Yeah, it's bizarre. And then, like, I'm a little bit younger, Jared. I'm 28, so I don't know him like that. But he always had this kind of mobster type of look to me. He just, something didn't seem, especially with what happened with the escorts or whatever that was a couple years ago, where he was trying to become the victim.
Oh, gosh,
where
I remember
he was
that
painted
one
as
too.
A victim. I never liked it. And he just always, to me, seemed like this type. Just listening to him talk and how everything went, he always rubbed me the wrong way as a coach. But thanks for taking my call.
No, absolutely. Good call, Brandon. And yes, an idea like that, if you could find a way, and maybe if they haven't done it yet, they should start writing that into contracts that, hey, you get any kind of violations, we, the NCAA and your school, are taking third to half of your salary. That'll make at least the coaches fall in the line. I don't think it clears up all the problems, but kudos to you, Brandon. That is certainly a start. I'm told we have Chris Manning now of FearTheSword.com Cavs site on SB Nation. Had a little trouble hooking up with him, but we have him now. Good afternoon, Chris. How you been?
I'm doing good. I apologize for that issue, but I'm happy to be on and talk to Cavs.
Technology is, it is what it is. Sometimes it messes up, but you're here now, and that's what's important. So let's talk some basketball. I want to talk about something that doesn't feel as down on a Friday as talking about how the heck do you fix college sports recruiting corruption. And that's a long tale. It would take multiple shows to do it, and I want to talk about something funner. So let's talk about the Cavs. They have won 10 in a row now. vaulting themselves all the way to number three in the East, struggled again with the Hawks yesterday, but ended up pulling out the win. And there's all sorts of little sub-stories going on with this team, but let's at least start with what we've seen on the court in these last 10 games. A lot of us were trying to hold off pushing panic buttons. I know some out there did, but your assessment as we now sit with a Cavs team that looks a lot like we thought they should, at least in terms of the wins and losses.
Yeah, and I think it's a team that's playing differently than you might have thought they would. You're seeing them actually try on defense. Their defensive rating has, you know, just over the twin streak has gone from dead last in the league to it's still in the bottom third, but it's risen five or six spots at this point, last time I checked, and that in itself is good. I think there's just a lot of little things that have worked. Dwayne Wade, I think, has settled really nicely into his role coming off the bench. I think LeBron has been given something to do on defense, and I think that has been really good for him. If you just look at the game from Tuesday, he was in full free safety mode, and it was causing havoc in that end. Even the lead up to he got ejected, he was incredible in that role. And you've gotten production out of pretty much everyone that's played. Channing Frye has been really good. Jetty Osman was really kind of productive, even though he made some mistakes against the Hawks. And they're winning games in ways you wouldn't expect. And they're just kind of rolling with the punches, kind of have an identity, and you have to wonder, you know, is this the exact right identity they need to win the title? But I think they've found an identity and have found a mojo that they didn't have early in the season, and it kind of came out of nowhere in a way that I wouldn't have expected this group, based on what we've seen, to reboss 10 wins like they've had and win in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, and obviously, even though the, you know, point totals may still be one thing, you know, the effort, I've always been big on saying that in the NBA, seemingly more than any of the other sports, you know, defense is a lot effort in terms of basketball. Either you're giving, a lot of times you're either giving the effort or you're not. And sometimes that can, you know, make all the difference. And then when people still look up at the scores during this winning streak, you're still seeing 114 like yesterday, 109, there's a 113, a 107. So you're like, oh, they're still giving up a ton of points. Well, that's just because no matter how you slice it, this team is not going to be one of the better defensive teams in the league in any metric. That's just not who they are. But then there's still some surprise things. For example, I caught a notation that says the team is best defensively, believe it or not, when Dwayne Wade is on the court. By some metrics, that doesn't even feel like it should be right, yet there it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the weirder things, is that Wade on the floor, when you look at his two-man units, look at five-man units, he's been a positive defensive effort. And I think some of it is he's actually been trying at defense. He's blocked shots. He had two steals, I think, against the Hawks. And it's weird because he's also playing with guys you wouldn't consider good defensive players. That's Kyle Korver, who's a good team defender, but right. not a lockdown defender. That's Channing Frye, who objectively is a bad defender. And, you know, some of it is I think guys just kind of know where they're going. And I think something as simple as that has mattered. I mean, Jose Calderon's a bad defender. He got ripped up by Dennis Schroeder against the Hawks, but he shut down Reggie Jackson because he worked hard and knew where he was going to go. And Frye's done that. Korver has always done that. I think Wade has done that. And I think just some of that basic effort, it kind of matters, especially in the regular season when so much of it is just, okay, how hard are you trying? And I think just even you look at the Hawks game, the Cavs got in trouble early because they didn't try, right? Like their defensive effort was abysmal. And then when they needed to, LeBron took over on Schroeder, wrapped it up a notch, and you had everyone kind of follow in line behind them.
We're talking with Chris Manning, one of the writers for FearTheSword.com, Cavs site over there on SB Nation, talking about the Cavs and their 10-game winning streak. And then all the little side stories that are going on. And I wasn't planning on starting with this as my first side story, but since we're kind of just talking about Dwayne Wade, let's talk about that. Article coming out, I believe in The Athletic, I think it was, where names were named of a couple of guys on the Cavs who were not too happy about Dwayne Wade being signed, you know, in the first place. What do you make of this, that whole thing?
I don't think that was surprising, and I think some of the it's come out again. I think it being hit on again, it kind of makes sense, just because, like, I think it was inevitable. But Wade did come in. If you think about how he came in, it meant Amon Schumper was going to lose minutes. It meant J.R. Smith might not start after being a starter on a title winner and being a starter since he came here. It meant Richard Jefferson might not be in the team. You know, like, right, like, I think that was kind of the one that, just from speculating a little bit, he's a guy that had been loved by his teammates, was a big locker room guy. You lose James Jones and because he retired, but the news RJ to get LeBron's buddy in there, that doesn't have necessarily great optics in the locker room. But based on everything else we've seen, it does seem like Wade has kind of endeared himself to guys, right? Like he's played hard and he seems to fit in better. There's a road trip episode where him and Kevin Love kind of were more jokey, and you know that's not an easy thing to kind of come into the situation so late, especially when you know it seems like it was a LeBron thing and all that. LeBron was, you know, in an article very defensive of Wade, but you know I think with the culture they had with the guys that they lost, I think a guy like Wade coming in was going to maybe naturally kind of cause some of those problems, especially when it forced other guys to have to accommodate in a way they probably didn't think they were going to have to.
Yeah, and I think with this kind of thing, it doesn't seem like it would be that big an issue right now as the way now things have gone. Obviously, these would have been opinions of guys back in, say, October or September or something like that. But now here we are in November, December, I should say, after the Cavs have now won 10 in a row, and pieces are falling into place in some respects, like Wade being the primary guy in this bench role, and I'm really liking what I've obviously been seeing out of that. Another name you mentioned in there, Chris, who might lose minutes or spots, is Ahmad Shumpert, who is going to lose minutes and spots. That's for darn sure. Arthroscopic surgery this morning on his knee. He's going to be out 2 months. I honestly have no idea what his role could be with this team. A guy who had a $40 million contract with a player option for next year on it. I don't know what his role even is going to be on this team when he returns in 2 months. And with today being December 1st, that means we're talking February.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's a fair question. I think I think you saw what his role kind of might be against the Hawks when Calderon was really bad on defense. I think you saw him being able to defend point guards would have value, but you know, Isaiah Thomas is coming back, and I think Isaiah is going to compete defensively, and because of what he brings you on offense, you're going to play him more minutes. And Shumpert was already playing a career low minutes. I think he was down to 20 minutes. He's normally been a 24 to 27 type of guy, and I think you're already seeing him get cut a little bit. I think if there's a positive to this, it's maybe you can include, I do think the Cavs are a team that are going to make a move. It would shock me if they didn't make some kind of trade. Maybe you can use Shumpert's salary as filler. Maybe that can become kind of a thing you do with him. A team can take on him when he's injured and kind of do what the Cavs did with him when he got hurt. He came over and he was hurt. And it also means that you're going to probably see some Jetty Osman, who played 11 minutes against the Hawks and has played with effort. And I think that's kind of what's going to happen here. But I think with Shumpert, it's also worth noting that I do think with Isaiah coming back, with needing to play him more, with not wanting to sacrifice Korver or JR or Jay Crowder or Dwayne Wade, he was going to be probably squeezed out anyway. And I think this maybe just means when he does come back, he might just, if he's still on the team, assuming they don't use him as a salary filler, that could just naturally be the case. He just comes back and he's there for depth purposes ahead of Calderon and maybe playing on nights where they feel like they need some defense on point guards.
How likely do you think a move is, the way you're describing, you seem fairly certain that some kind of trade will be made? And what's the time frame you're thinking that this might go down? Is this an early January thing like they did with Mozgov and JR and Shump a couple years ago? Is this more waiting until the deadline in February? What's the timing you see on something like that?
I think they'll take their time. I think the Nets pick could be something if the right guy becomes available, and that's always kind of going to be the wild card out there. But I think it depends on where situations go, and it has to be the right guy. If a team that has a wing or something like that they might need, or some other player, maybe that player becomes available with the pick and for salary filler, and that maybe can work. But I think it's hard to sort of know. But just knowing what the reason I feel I'm so certain about this is that they have their own first round pick they can trade. They have some salaries that are going to be off the books that other teams might find useful heading into a nuclear summer where there's not going to be a lot of money. Maybe this can help some team free up money for next summer if there's someone they really want to go after.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not been the team's MO to stand pat. Right? And I don't know like exactly what the target would be, but I would just be very surprised if they didn't do something near the deadline. And I think we have 2 months, and I think closer to the deadline makes some sense, unless the right player just magically becomes available, like Mozgov did and like JR and Ahmad Shumpert did a couple years ago.
Yeah, good call on that one. We're talking with Chris Manning, SB Nation Cavs writer on their SB Nation site, fearthesword.com, joining us here on the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin in for Bob France here on this Friday. One last question before I let you go. Thanks so much for the time today, Chris. We always enjoy chatting with you. On the good injury front, I'm very encouraged by what I've been reading over the course of this week, in that, one, Tristan Thompson sounds like he could be back within a week or two tops. And then on the other is Isaiah Thomas, who by all reports now, we might be seeing him here in just a couple of weeks while it's still December and still calendar year 2017. Your thoughts on what it'll mean for this team when those guys come back, particularly Tristan, because obviously he's there for his energy and rebounding and things like that, but as not much of an offensive guy, I wonder what that'll do to some of the rotations and things. But just your overall assessment, as it sounds like both of those guys might be back in the lineup before Christmas.
I think it's good to get them both back sooner rather than later. I think you want the time to get them acclimated, to get them comfortable with everything that's going on with them. I think that's definitely true. I think that's certainly the case. You want them back. Yes, you're going to mess up your mojo a little bit. Channing Frye is going to play less, right? And you're going to have to get used to everyone playing with Isaiah. But I think it's worth it to get them back, regardless of how many games you win in a row. I think that matters more than beating the Celtics win streak or something like that. I think the thing that works out for the Cavs right now is that if you look at their schedule between now and Christmas, Tristan might come back next week. They have the Sixers on Saturday, and that could mean Joel Embiid. But there are bad games next week. The Bulls, the Kings, the Pacers are all teams that, and the Pacers do have good centers, but those are games Tristan makes sense to come back. The next week, in between now and then, the Cavs don't play anyone, but they play the teams like the Jazz, who are struggling, mm-hmm. the Lakers and the Hawks. These are games with days off in between, with practice time in between, which is something they're saying they want for both guys.
Right.
There are perfect landing spots where you can have Isaiah come back against someone like, the Hawks are playing Isaiah Taylor and not good players at point guard. The Lakers have Lonzo Ball, but he's struggling, and Jordan Clarkson. These are very good games for Isaiah to come back in at home with days leading in the practice to get some reps in with the group. Right now, how the schedule works out, if they want to have, and especially leading up to the Warriors game, there are a lot of home games. There are a lot of games against teams that are struggling, that have their own injury issues. This is kind of a perfect time if you're going to implement them back in with the mojo right, with the time in the schedule. It's a perfect time to bring both guys back, whether that's next week or the week after, and whether they come back at the same time or on different nights.
Chris, we always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Thanks so much for taking the time here on this Friday afternoon. Enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up with you down the line.
Thanks again for having me.
That is Chris Manning, one of the writers, fearthesword.com. That's the Cavs site over there on SB Nation. All right, we got to take a quick time out, get you a local Sports Center update that will include an update on this Division 5 state title game. I can tell you that Eastwood's still trailing at this point. We'll give you the lowdown on that during the Sports Center update. Check the weather, check the traffic. And then on the other side, speaking of high school, we're going to dive into all sorts of high school topics. The voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, Bill Clark, will join us for a little last thoughts on football, meaning this Eastwood game and last week's Central Catholic loss in the state semi. And then we're going to switch our gears to basketball, the first full Friday of high school basketball all around the area. And we got a game for you with Bill Clark and the crew tonight. That's Rogers at St. John's, 7 o'clock, the coverage time here on the Ticket. So we're going to dive into all that. Bill Clark next here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kushler, Chris Mitchell, we're in for Bob France on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are, final segment here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Kushlin, Chris Mitchell, we're hanging out with you today. Bob France out today. Coming up next, of course, Mike Miller on Drive Time. He's back in the big chair. Going to have a lot of college football championship game previews. He's got Tim May, Bruce Gradkowski, and Wisconsin beat writer with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Gary DeMott. Will be joining him, so lots on the title games involving the Buckeyes and the Toledo Rockets, and that we in the meantime here in this final segment here on this Friday, we're going to focus on some high school things. We've chatted with this great man every Friday at this time, but this is the change up interview, if you will, as we once again welcome in the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, back on the show with us, Bill Clark, joining us. Good afternoon, Bill. How are you?
Coach, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Hey, not too bad, not too bad. Like I said, this is kind of the transition interview. By that, I mean we're going to literally transition from the football to the basketball season here for high school with this spot. And so let's start with last week. It did not go Central Catholic's way. A touchdown late helped put it away for Trotwood Madison. And in that matchup of teams that seem to see each other seemingly every year, it feels like anyway, at playoff time, around this type around, and Central Catholic season coming to an end in the state semifinals a week ago.
Yeah, it was a very frustrating night for the Irish. They, you know, you go up against a team that scores 52 points a game, and you hold them to one offensive touchdown, which, as you mentioned, came late, where the Ravion Hargrove, who ended up number two in the balloting for Mr. Football in Ohio, broke off a 77-yard run. But up until then, the Irish defense had held Trotwood in check. I mean, they just could not get anything going. Obviously, the Irish couldn't either. And then two block punts. You don't see that happen very often, but when you have a punter that does it rugby style and you do it out of your end zone, your time and your space is a little tough. So they got in there. They blocked the first punt, made a great play, saving it from going out of the end zone, fell on it for a touchdown, and then later they blocked a second punt at pretty much in the same area of the field, but at the opposite end. Central kicking out of their near their goal post, and that was falling on. That did go out of the end zone for a safety, but the Irish just couldn't get anything going. They had 13 penalties, and Greg Dempsey preached about that all year. You know, you can't win big games with penalties coming over and over and over, and you just constantly shot themselves in the foot. I mean, they had a great play in the fourth quarter. They had a long pass down to the 40-yard line of Trotwood. Trotwood jumped offside in the next play, so it was first and five from the 35, and three plays later, Central was kicking, punting from their 48-yard line. I mean, three plays, boom, 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 going in the wrong direction. So it was a very tough night. The Irish defense, as we talked about last week, Kush, when Bob was here, I said the Irish defense can keep this team in check, and the offense can get a little bit going. Central could beat them, and they definitely had the chance to beat them. There was no doubt about it, but 13 penalties and two costly block punts were the difference. But they gave Trotwood all they could handle, and Trotwood is going to play in the state championship game tomorrow night.
Oh, and in many ways, the closeness of that game is exactly what I would have expected with those two matching up. And now that the Irish season football-wise is over, they're obviously not playing this weekend for a state title. Kind of wrap it up for me. Where does this season therefore rank in terms of a program that's been to these points a lot in the last decade?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to use the term dynasty, but when you get to four straight Final Fours in high school football, that's a pretty good program. And obviously, Greg Dempsey, since he got the job in 2000, has done very well with numerous league titles and three state championships and one state runner-up. And again, getting to the Final Four 4 years in a row, they've got a target on their back every year. And Coach Dempsey said that's the way you want it. You want to be the hunted. And they were. And they got beat this year by Whitmer in a really good game, and they got beat by St. John's when St. John's had a lot to play for the first time since 2010, and they came out and they beat the Irish. But the cover's not there by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Devon Rivers is going to be graduating, but Jace Bowen is coming back. The majority of the offensive line is back. Two or three of the linebackers are back. So Central will still be in the mix next year, but there's a possibility that they would be moving to Division II next year. It's a two-year cycle. And depending on what they figure out as far as the enrollment is, there's talk that Central might go up to Division II. That being said, for people who are wondering, if Central had the same amount of computer points this year in Division II rather than Division III, they would have been number three in the district as opposed to number one. So they still would have hosted a first-round game, and what happens after that, you don't know. But, you know, they've been to the playoffs now 16 straight years, you know, they've got a great program over there. Very disappointing last week. Everybody thought we'd be playing this Saturday, but unfortunately that's not the way it panned out. Trotwood came up with some big plays when they had to, and, you know, Central will move on. And as I said, it's frustrating for the players and the coaches, but it was a great season. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the state of Ohio that would have switched places with Central in a heartbeat. despite the fact that they lost the game in the Final Four.
No doubt about that last part, Bill. Bill Clark, Voice High School Sports, joining us here. Wrap up a Friday. Let's talk about the one team still alive, and they got one quarter to go, end of three from Canton in Division Five. The only Northwest Ohio team still alive, the Eastwood Eagles, but they are trailing right now Wheelersburg 7-6. I don't know how much of the game you've been able to see and or hear so far, and we have continued coverage of that game right now over on Talk Radio 100.7. But your thoughts of this one, Bill? It's been a defensive struggle, literally, except for two drives for each one for each team. There was one point in the first half where I was watching some of this, and if I did my math right, midway through the second quarter, right before Wheelersburg got their one touchdown that's leading this game right now, they were giving up a grand total of -6 total yards to Wheelersburg. But Wheelersburg did put one drive before the half, and unlike Eastwood, they made their extra point. That's the difference right now. What have you seen so far or heard so far out of this game that you've been able to catch so far?
Well, I've been listening to it this afternoon on 100.7, and it seems like it was kind of like the same thing Center went through last week. You got two teams that can put points on the board, but defense, they say defense wins championships, and right now both defenses are playing very, very well. And hopefully that missed extra point doesn't come back to haunt Eastwood. But, you know, Eastwood is a team that's been averaging almost 48 points a game, I think, in the tournament. And they were close to 50 points during the regular season. So this is an offensive juggernaut. But Wheelersburg has been able to shut them down, as has Eastwood against the Pirates as well. So if you like defensive football, you should be sitting in Canton right now, because that's what you're going to see. And it'll come down now in the fourth quarter. You know, if anybody can put a drive together, I think the next score could be for the state championship in that game.
Yeah, no question. That last part right there, plus one of the first parts you said, that it's starting to feel a little familiar to what you saw last Friday for Central in the state title. Yeah, if somebody gets a fourth quarter score here, that may be the game winner at this point, the way this game is going. But win or lose at this point for Eastwood, it's still got to be an absolute tip of the cap. This is their first appearance in a state title game. And I saw a graphic during the broadcast earlier on the Wheelersburg side. They have the sixth most appearances of any school in the state of Ohio in terms of playoff appearances with 29. They've been to at least the state semis 7 times and have a state championship from 1989. So playoff-wise, Wheelersburg is the veteran and Eastwood's kind of the neophyte. But with all those things, and regardless of what happens in this fourth quarter, what a season for the Eastwood Eagles to get to points they've never gotten to before.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, Craig Rutherford took over for his dad, who was there for decades, and Craig had been part of the program. He played there, then went to Bowling Green, came back. He was an assistant coach for a long time. So not a whole lot of changes as far as the coaching and how they do things at Eastwood. But he caught lightning in a bottle. These kids have been playing great football all year, and you know, now they go, well, what about the fact that they're just probably excited to be there? That's not the mindset of these Eastwood Eagles.
Not at this point in the tournament for anybody,
no,
really.
We talked to Craig Rutherford a couple of weeks ago on our coaches show, and he said, no, we're where we're supposed to be. This is what we had talked about. We looked at this season to try to go 1-0 every week, and, you know, they've done it 14 times now, and they're trying to get that big 15th one this afternoon. But this has been an amazing year for Eastwood. They closed the school today, which is obviously no surprise, and I think the entire community is down there, except maybe one patrolman who has to stay there to make sure Eastwood doesn't fall off the mat. But, you know, the whole city is behind them, and it's great for that community. It's great for Northwest Ohio. And to go down there for the first time, and, you know, you said that you know, Wheelersburg has been there 29 times, but none of those kids are around. You know, they might have the experience of, quote, being there, but those kids that were part of those 29 teams aren't on this team. So this is an even battle, and hopefully Eastwood can come up with that big fourth quarter score and get that state title.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and that's very true. It's not like any of these guys were a part of some of those other teams. Maybe, you know, last year or the year before, if they were on the team, and I was just pointing out from a program perspective,
sure,
Wheelersburg is the veteran, and Eastwood's kind of the neophyte in this one, and we'll keep you updated as we go through this fourth quarter. Still 7-6 right now, Wheelersburg beating Eastwood. Eastwood does have the football at this moment. And now let's do the transition part of this interview in the last couple couple of minutes we have, Bill. It's December, and that also means it's time for some high school basketball, and you guys got your first broadcast of the season tonight. Rogers at St. John, 7 o'clock the coverage time around then here on the ticket. That'll also be filed, and we're happy to announce this one, the inaugural episode of a high school basketball scoreboard show. We've been obviously doing those for football on every Friday, which makes sense, but we'll be doing that on every Friday broadcast right after you guys are done. So let's go through some of these conferences and leagues right now in a more of a kind of preview state, because everybody's either opening the season this weekend or they played at most one game. And let's start with this track, and you picked a good one, as St. John's is looking by a lot to do something big in the track this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, St. John's is kind of like the, you know, it sounds crazy to say it, but, you know, Central's been the most successful team for the last several years in football, but St. John's has kind of run the table as far as basketball goes. Ed Einchel starting his 39th year, and tonight's a very special night for Ed because they're actually dedicating the floor at the St. John's Jesuit to Ed Einchel. His signature will be on the floor, and we'll have an extended interview. Paul Broska will sit with Ed tonight before the game, and we'll have that in our pregame show. But, you know, Ed's a class guy. I mean, I think the amazing thing about Ed Einchel is that in 39 years, he doesn't force a system down his kid's throat. He looks at what he has talent-wise, and he will mold his system to the kids that he had. I mean, the Sean Coleman, Denny Amrine, Larinaga, the names go on. But there was only one guy in the entire realm of Ed Einchel coaching that he said, I gave free rein to, and that was Shane Comeis. I mean, he was the only guy that Ed Einchel said, I don't care what you do on the floor, you do what you want. Everybody else had a role to fill, even the superstars. And that's why I think he's so successful, because he molds his system to the talent that he has. And this year he's got some talent coming back. He's got the reigning Blade Player of the Year, All-State performer Vince Williams. He's going to Virginia Commonwealth next year. And then Houston King has been on the varsity for a couple of years. He's a three-point assassin. Titans just reload. They don't rebuild. And they're picked by the coaches in the track to win the track, and that's really no surprise. And Travis Lewis, St. Francis, I think they're going to have another great year. Ryan Brown continues to put up good numbers at Whitmer, and then the rest of the track just kind of falls in place. Central Catholic will have another late start because they've got football players coming in, so they've had to adjust their schedule a little bit. But the track, most people would think, is probably one of the more competitive leagues, not only for football, but for basketball in the state of Ohio. And I think because of that, it makes it fun to watch. But, yeah, tonight we'll kick things off with Rogers at St. John's, and they're under a first-year coach, too. So a lot of basketball coming up over the next couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick, Rogers, of course, in the City League, and the City League gets a lot more love basketball-wise than they do for football. Rogers has been one of the top programs. A lot of people are liking weight this year, so in about the 20 seconds or so I have left, because the music's playing, break down the City League this year for me.
Yeah, I think the coaches know what they're talking about. Adam Rodriguez is 6 year at Wade. I think the Indians could win their first title in a long time. Tonight's a Rogers ball club. They got some young kids they have to work into the system. Christian Smith is one of their stars. He's going to lead a very young team. So the City League's going to be up for grabs, but I think you're right. I think Wade and Rogers are probably two at the top.
It is high school basketball debuting. Rogers at St. John's. Bill Clark and the crew will have the call for you starting at 7 o'clock here on the ticket. Always appreciate the time, Bill. We'll definitely check in with you most Fridays for a little basketball update. Sound good?
Look forward to it, Coach. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Bill Clark, for joining us. And we are out of time. The music's playing, so let me go ahead and shut up right now and send you on over to drive time. Mike Miller's back in the big chair. A lot of college football, I should say. Conference title game stuff. He's going to be talking with Tim May, Bruce Gradkowski, Gary D'Amato on the Wisconsin side of things. So anything and everything you need to know about the MAC title game involving the Rockets and the Big Ten title game involving the Buckeyes, Mike Miller on Drive Time has that all covered for you coming up next. Enjoy all the college games this week, and we'll break them all down Monday. Have a good weekend. We'll see you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.